This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You're listening to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Roshan Kanesan. Now, although later to the game, Touch & Go e-wallet is among the fastest growing mobile payment apps in the country and has been aggressive in its cashbacks, branding and merchant acquisition. However, the e-wallet space is quite crowded and adoption has been slow, with only 8% of the population using them for payments. So, can a name primarily associated with tolls, parking and prepaid cards compete in this highly competitive field? Yeah. To answer these questions and more, I'm speaking to Ignatius Ong, CEO of TNG Digital Sindrian Berhad, the owner and operator of Touch & Go e-wallet. Ignatius, welcome to the show.
Good to be back.
So let's start with the first question. Every time I talk to anyone about Touch & Go e-wallet, the first and probably the primary grievance they have is, why can't I top up my prepaid Touch & Go card using your e-wallet?
So essentially, let's put it this way. Touch & Go is actually our parent company, and they have been in the space of cashless using the card for the last 20 years. And it's a totally different system as what the e-wallet is. E-wallet has been coming into play, especially in China, for the last 10 years. And for us here in Malaysia, I think we've, in a way, it's about 3 years now coming into play. It's a two different distinct system. So what happens here is that if you look at a Touch & Go card, you need to physically go to a authorized outlet, a physical touch point, and actually have the card reloaded. And when you do the reload, you actually need a card reader. So as you and I know, our phone is not a card reader itself. Hence, there is no way in terms of, from a system perspective, in terms from a physical point of perspective, you can't do that reload. But what we have done differently today is that because we want to make sure that everyone who has a card can jump onto the bandwagon of the e-wallet as soon as possible and as fast as possible. So what we have done is we have actually created a module in our e-wallet, which is called PayDirect. Now, the PayDirect system essentially does what it does, pair the card to the wallet. And what happens is once you have actually keyed in that 10 serial number behind your Touch & Go card on the on your e-wallet, it actually then, you pass through toll, you go through parking, you do your card tapping as per normal, or you put it into your smart tag, the deduction of the amount comes off from the wallet, not from the card. Hence, we actually alleviate the hassle of that person, even though having a card, you don't need to go and physically reload it at a physical touch point like 7-Eleven or Shell or Petronas.
Right, so that's a way around the current system,
yes,
the limits of the current system. Now, how widespread is the current PayDirect program? Because I think it was limited to some tolls. How wide is it now?
We have actually got about 25 highways on us. In fact, all the open tollways are actually with the Touch & Go e-wallet. The only one that is left is the closed tollway, as you and I know, is the Plus one, the big ones, right? The backbone of Semenanjung. So the North-South Expressway, the Elite, the NKVE. And that one, if I'm not mistaken, Plus has actually come out with a announcement. So they're looking at 1st of April opening it up. So we will be on board by then. It should be all tollways with us.
So once this happens, will this cease to be a problem? Will I never have to worry about going through a toll and not being able to pay it because I've been
absolutely
reloaded?
Right. So you will still keep that card and you can keep a minimal amount in the card for whatever reasons that you want to do it. But moving forward, when all the tollways is on board with Touch & Go e-wallet, the amount of the toll to be paid will be deducted directly from the e-wallet itself. And of course, the next step forward is that we are also trying to get people to onboard into the RFID. That's the end game.
Right. And speaking of end games here, as more people migrate over to the e-wallet, and I guess the importance of the prepaid card diminishes as the e-wallet becomes more important in terms of utility, is the e-wallet a replacement to the traditional business?
I wouldn't say it's a replacement. I think it goes hand in hand. It's complementary. I don't think that the card will ever go away. At the end of the day, if you look at a couple of other countries, I always use benchmarks. I always use something that you can touch and feel. So if you look at into Singapore, they have a very strong e-wallet space similar to Malaysia, but the EasyLink still continues to work. Similarly, in Hong Kong, Octopus Card continues to work. So I think there is still a space for the Touch and Go Card to continue to operate and deliver value to people. And I believe my parent company is also looking at evolving themselves to be a lot more prominent in certain other areas, especially so on the transportation side.
Right. So it could be that the prepaid card becomes an accessory to the e-wallet.
Correct. It's complementary.
So let's talk about your growth then, because a big part of, for an e-wallet to thrive, you need that user base to be using and you need it to be active.
Yeah.
And if I'm not mistaken, I think you've got about 7 million users at this point, over 120,000 merchants. And the goal is to, I think, hit 12 million, was it, in 2020? That's quite a goal. What's the strategic plan to achieve this?
Well, when we started off 2019, we had about 2 million registered users. End of 2019, we hit about 6.8 million. And today we are at 7 million. So we are growing quite exponentially. So we are looking at giving ourselves a very, very huge target. So I've got the team to look into at least doubling what we have done in 2019 and 2020. And in terms of merchant acquisition as well, we've hit about 120,000. We're looking at doubling it as well this year. But we are also focusing on a couple of areas. So I think to answer your question with regards to what is our strategy, so it's a couple of prongs, right? We are acquiring users as we speak, but we are at the same time also acquiring merchants. So we are looking into the space of making sure that our presence is everywhere, every nook and corner in Malaysia. And we have the big brands, for example, Tesco's with us. We have Kidzania. We have Legoland. We have even Healthland with us. But what is key is that I've always asked this question to someone. A typical life of a Malaysian, when you get into work, first thing is you're going to have your breakfast. And most of us have our breakfast in some mamak stall or some Chinese coffee shop or some Malay warung, right? And these places are predominantly cash transacted. So we want to be at those areas. We want to be at Pasar Malams. We want to be at Red Market. And once we are at those areas, it makes it very, very seamless for a user to get on. So it would be an easier task for us to say, let's say, getting a user who is not with us. And he will ask why. I say, because we are here. We are everywhere. We're making your transaction a lot more easier. You don't need to physically bring your physical wallet out. You don't need to think about, at the end of the week, trying to look for an ATM machine to withdraw money. So those are the convenience that we provide. Those are the benefits that people can see and feel.
So the strategy, I think the biggest part here is the merchant acquisition.
Yes.
Making this a habit. Because when it comes to apps, the most important thing is building that habit, because you want to make sure your app stays on that phone. And one of the strategies has been cashbacks, and this has been utilized by you and the other platforms as a way to get consumers to try the platform. Right. But is this a sustainable strategy?
It's never a sustainable strategy when it comes to just one party funding the whole thing. But I think during an acquisition mode, which we are in 2018, 2019, and now 2020, it's a good sweetener to get people to be on board on the platform. But the whole end game for us is about getting the user to try it twice, three times. And the best if it hits more than five times. And the whole point is for them to actually have that experience. The user experience is very, very important. When they feel that, hey, it's seamless, it's less than 3 seconds to do a payment as compared to probably, and we did a timing on ourselves, right? Using actual physical cash. It goes between 1 minute to 1.5 minutes because you're going to pass that money to that person. The guy's going to open the cash till. He's going to look for change. And the worst thing is going to get coins back. So once a user have tried it on us, they feel the user, the convenience, the seamlessness, and they will continue to use it. Now, the cashback is a good sweetener now. I think moving forward, it may still be there. It may not be purely funded by, let's say, the e-wallet themselves. So I'll give you an example. When we ran a campaign, one that is very recent, we ran it together with one of our very, very close merchants, and it was so successful. We actually planned a campaign for 2 months. We got it done in 15 days. And we told them and said, look, you know, we of course have a terms and conditions to say that it's capped by the kind of, you know, numbers of transactions we can go through. And the merchant has actually come back to us and said, hey, you know what? Our sales revenue has tripled during that period. And think about it, tripling their top line revenue. So they're saying, let's run another campaign, and they will now fund it themselves together with us. So they see the benefit of using working together with Touch and Go e-wallet because we have a huge user base. We can easily channel users and customers to their outlets as well. But at the same time, they're saying, look, with a tripling of their top line revenue, they can actually do that funding itself. So cashback may continue, but it may not be the way that we are doing it today.
Yeah, and so what you're suggesting is that you could be looking at a hybrid model where it's either funded by you or by the merchant,
yes,
or a mix here.
Or it could be a mix as well. That's right.
So speaking of funding, let's talk about revenue generation. Mm-hmm. How does the e-wallet make money?
Okay, as any form of payment service provider, you make money from what we call an MDR, a merchant discount rate. And we have actually started to apply that this year itself, especially with the big merchants. But again, when you work in a... Well, it's no secret, right? Payments, you don't make money out of it much. You can cover a little bit of the cost, but ultimate goal is that you just want to ensure that you get the usability of the wallet. So merchant payment is very important because everything that you do every day, there's always payments. But what we're going to do in moving forward is that we're going to look into other alternatives, other platforms, other form of product services that we're going to offer onto our platform itself. So we are definitely looking into something like banking products, asset management products that we're going to offer.
Yes, so this is something we've heard on the grill itself, that the important part is the data, acquiring the users, acquiring the data, acquiring the merchants, and seeing that cash flow, because that will allow you to look into other digital financial services. Yep. And as a recent Google, a joint report by Google, Bain and Temasek has shown, there's a lot of money to be made in these digital financial services. But because there's so much money to be made in potentially, it's also quite a crowded field. What's your competitive edge here? Because I might keep one or two e-wallets on my phone, but we have three or more big players in the country. What's stopping me from deleting TNG e-wallet from my phone?
I think it's all about value proposition. It's all about making sure that the user, when they use our wallet, they feel that it is convenient. It has a benefit to them. And I think it's all about making sure that we are catering to the pain points of our users. So, for example, when we started off about 1.5 years ago, there was quite a bit of a challenge as far as I was told, because I've been in the company for only, 5 months ago. It's quite difficult to talk to a user and say, hey, you know what, download Touch and Go e-wallet, because you can do this and this. But at that point in time, the merchant that we have on board was small. So it's actually a chicken and egg story, right? When we speak to the merchant, and the merchant say, hey, you know, your user base is not big enough. But I think we are at a somewhat of a good scale now, right? And hence, we're going to get a lot more merchants on board. And I need to make sure that when a user uses a wallet, they can see our acceptance points everywhere. Now, the other thing is also, of course, the fact that we basically own the transportation arena. So working very closely with our parent company, Touch & Go, we are also trying to now starting to convert the card users into the e-wallet, either through the PayDirect, or the other way is the end game, which is moving them to RFID. I think that space, basically, we own it. So with that kind of value proposition and the other things that we're doing beyond transportation, and we are offering that kind of value and products and services, people will continue to stay with us. We're going to roll out something different this year, something to do with the financial services suite products. So that one will actually entice users to continue to keep themselves on our wallet itself.
So the tolls have played quite a big part in your value proposition, right? How much are you reliant on the toll to entrench users into your system?
I believe when we started off, the toll was basically something that is a cornerstone for the entire value proposition of Touch & Go e-wallet. But I think in the last 1 year itself, especially the last 9 months, the team in Touch & Go e-wallet has done so well. They've been relentless. You know, moving a merchant base of about 30,000 all the way up to 120,000 and growing. We are seeing it now on an equal footing. People who uses toll uses our wallet. But the guys who's going down to, you know, the high street, going into a 7-Eleven shop, a Minus shop, a Tesco, right? Going to Kidzania, they're also using our wallet because of the benefits that they derive with the wallet, and also our merchants, that we curate certain kind of campaigns specific to our merchants itself. So we are looking at now at a position where people sees the Touch & Go e-wallet. Toll is not the first thing that comes to mind. That the first thing that comes to mind is convenience. The first thing that comes to mind is that the safety of using an e-wallet.
And now we'll continue this discussion in just a little bit. We're going to get into your ambitions. There's a super app on the way. And what are these digital financial services that we could see spawn out of this e-wallet? Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Welcome back to The Breakfast Grill. You're here with me, Roshan Kanesan, and in studio this morning, Ignatius Ong, CEO of TNG Digital Siran Berhad, the owner and operator of Touch & Go e-wallet. Now, Ignatius, let's talk about ambitions of this brand. Now, you've alluded to areas that you want to go into. But one of the things that we're seeing very prominently happen is the rise of this super app, quote unquote, where basically you open up the app and you can do anything you
want. Almost anything, yes. Is
that the end game or the ambitions for you down the road?
Well, we want to ensure that the app that we have has, well, addresses a lot of the usage of a user, especially for Malaysian. Hence, we will be in areas where the user requires it to be. So we won't want to think about being too ambitious and say, hey, you know, not just app to do payment, but we want to be the app that actually does emailing, the app that actually does, let's say, for example, a chat group. We may go into that level, we'll never say no to that. But I think the key point about the app is about transacting using cash, or basically in this case, transferring and funding the wallet from, let's say, your credit card or ATM card or the bank account, and you using that app to do transactions, whether it be for purchase. So in the longer run, we will do things that is tied up with that portion. So hence, that's why I alluded you guys to think about banking products. We'll think about other financial services products, maybe with an asset management company. So those are the things that people can start to see, hey, not just an app to do with payment itself. I may use an app for saving money, for example, or it could be an app for someone who wants to invest on certain things. So those are the things that we want to see linkage with. It's not going to be a super app that says, look, we're going to do everything else other than just the financial services. Because then it becomes too cluttered. The app becomes too complicated to use. And we want to make sure that things is simplistic as well.
So maybe a super financial app then.
Perhaps so.
So let's talk about Beyond Payments then, because that seems to be something that you're quite bullish on. What are the sort of services or products that we could be seeing come to the platform?
I think let's watch out when we make the announcement. I'm sure some of my competitors are listening to this this session as well. So let's just watch this space. We can be announcing one product or one services quite as early as probably Q1 or early Q2 this year.
So with the field being so crowded as it is, do you expect to see consolidation happen?
I think we already started to see some gone off last year. You know, there was one of the earlier
DG's VCash.
Yes, it was very unfortunate to hear that. But again, I said 50E money license has been issued by Bank Negara. Nothing wrong with that. But think about it. Again, I want to bring you back to, let's say, another powerhouse, China, right? Got a 1.4 billion population, but there's essentially only two wallets in there, Alipay and WeChat Pay. So in Malaysia, how many wallets again? You know, I leave this question back to the users. How many wallets do you really, really want to fund? And do you want to have a super e-wallet that actually caters to your every need? Or you want 20 e-wallets that caters to every specific needs? So I think that's the question I always throw it back to the users. But if you ask me, it's too much today. So one way or another, you will see some people who is not strong enough, they will probably fall off the cliff. But there will be also a period of time when we need to look at into consolidation. But consolidation means the other guy who is thinking of about acquiring another person, they need to ask that themselves a question. What is the value proposition that's going to be on the table? If it's more or less a similar kind of value proposition, does it make sense for it?
Right, because based on your ambitions, I'm going to guess that you would rather be the hunter as opposed to the hunted in the consolidation space.
Yes.
Is that something that's on the cards at all?
We'll cross the bridge when it comes to it. What we are focused today, the entire team, is about building the brand, building the value proposition, building the product and services that we can offer to our users.
So not a priority at this point in time.
Yeah.
Another thing, looking into your future, whether this is a priority, digital banking. Mm-hmm. Now, Grab and Singtel have recently teamed up on a Singaporean digital banking license. Mm-hmm. And I think Bank Negara has issued a framework here as well. I guess, is this the true end game for Touch and Go e-wallet?
I think you can look at it a couple of perspectives. But essentially, I think this question is best posted to my shareholders. But let's put it on it this way. We're running the e-wallet platform that we have today, and we can more or less provide all these different kind of banking products to our users without being a virtual bank itself. We can work closely with a strategic partner, a bank itself, right? So perhaps at this point in time, our focus again, like getting things roll up fast. But if you were to start thinking about having a virtual banking license, you get yourself a little bit more split in a way. So I'm more focused on getting things done now, getting all the products out, and it could be working with various partners along the line. And the best part about doing it this way for now is that I don't hold the liability, I don't hold the balance sheet itself. So the bank, the virtual banking thing could be something that we can look at it later. But again, like I said, these are something that is between the shareholders and perhaps myself and senior management to discuss about.
Right. So one of your, I guess, indirect shareholders, CIMB owns a majority of Touch & Go. Touch & Go owns a majority of the e-wallet.
Yeah.
Do you represent the digital aspirations of CIMB?
I really can't say that. To be very frank, I think there's a reason why that the TNG Digital is a separate company from the bank itself. For simple reason is that we are given the mandate to grow in whatever way and form that we need to, right? And it's not to be held on by, let's say, for example, a certain banking license for that matter. But it's good to have CIMB as our parent company in one way or another, we call it, because it's going through Touch & Go. We have a lot of periodic powwow sessions with CIMB. So they bring to the table not just the equity funding, but they also bring onto the table the market experience, the banking experience and expertise that they can actually share with us. So that's where we actually leverage off each other and see how best we can actually roll things out to users, what they want in the market.
Okay, and just shifting gears a little bit, you know, the government wants to push cashless, right?
Cashless society.
Whether through Bank Negara or the government's own e-Tunai Rakyat program, which is giving out 30 ringgit to eligible participants, which is estimated, I think, to be around 15 million Malaysians who will receive 30 ringgit. Yeah. I guess they have to opt in for this. Is this really going to move the needle when it comes to cashless adoption in Malaysia?
I believe it does. You know, and I do applaud the government coming in such a way as well. I think at the end of the day, it's not just about Touch & Go e-wallet or some of my competitors going out to educate the market. The government stepping in to do this e-Tunai thing has given a lot of impetus for people like us to push that agenda out much, much strongly. So if you ask me, is it going to push needle? I believe so. I think there's a lot of people is going to be, you know, downloading and registering themselves on the e-wallet space itself. 15 January, we'll know exactly what's going to happen. But I'm quite confident that it will generate a lot more user case onto the e-wallet. And at the same time, it's all about the experience. Again, like I said, when a user experiences it once, experiences it twice, they will see that the convenience, the seamlessness of using e-wallet, it will make them start shifting their mindset. And I think that's a good direction to go.
And what's the response been on your side for this program?
Well, let's put it this way. The other day when Khazanah made an announcement and they have actually named the three e-wallets that is being designated to you to do the e-Tunai thing, we have seen a spike in registration without us doing much. So there was no cashback. We didn't do any cashback and all that to just entice people to come in. There was a spike. There was a spike of at least 300% in terms of registration on a per day basis and KYCing themselves. So KYCing is basically verifying themselves on an e-wallet, taking the photo of your IC back in front and a selfie. So, and we will see this a lot more Wednesday. So we are keeping ourselves a little bit, you know, taking a step back, but we're watching the space.
Malaysia is still largely reliant on cash.
Yes.
And I mean, we've talked about your other competitors and the partners and all of that. But do you think cash is your biggest competitor?
I think it's all about mindset change. When people use cash, you think about it, it's that you feel the cash in your hands, right? You hold the cash itself and you get a change, you see the cash. So that kind of habit has been ingrained in the Malaysian for the last, I don't know, 60, 70 years. Now, getting them to start looking into their smartphone and doing transactions, it takes a bit of a mindset change. So to me, it's not about cash being my competitor. It's about changing people's mindset. And that's a challenge for us today. So we are now trying to make sure that that habit is being brought into the e-wallet space. It has to become second nature.
All right. And on that note, Ignatius, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for inviting me again.
I've been speaking to Ignatius Ong, CEO of TNG Digital, Sindran Berhad, the owner and operator of Touch & Go e-wallet. You've been listening to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Roshan Kanesan for The Morning Run, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.